This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. Chattanooga's Diversify Summit takes place on Friday. The summit, hosted by the Chattanooga Area Chamber of Commerce, highlights diversity, inclusion, and the 21st century workplace. But this year, due to COVID-19, Diversify will be held on Zoom as a virtual seminar and discussion session. The summit comes as the chamber recently adopted a statement of solidarity to fight racism. After the killing of George Floyd while in police custody in Minneapolis and ongoing protests across the country, including here in Chattanooga, against police brutality. Keynote speaker for Diversify is Professor Manuel Pastor, director of the Equity Research Institute at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles. We spoke with him and Darian Scott, the Chamber's director of talent and economic inclusion. Darian, Manuel, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Darian, Diversify has been around for a few years, but not like we're going to see this year, given all that has happened across the country in the past month.
Yeah, Diversify, we've been doing it for like 6 years now. I've had the pleasure to be part of three or four of those, and now this one, of course. But yes, we went from an expo type of thing, vendors and things like that, but now we're doing more with education. We realized that it's more impactful to educate our community on how to interact together. So last year we started the Diversify Summit, and this year we're going with the summit format again. Dr. Pastor, he's our keynote speaker, and it's going to be a great event. We have a couple of breakout sessions in the morning. We start at 8 o'clock. I'm going to say a few words. Our CEO is going to say a few words. We go into our first breakout session with Dr. Linda Wiley. She does some great things. I'm excited that she's coming. And then we do the second breakout session with Jessica Stallings, and she's a very impactful speaker and presenter as well. So then we go into our keynote. We're going to have a great panel discussion at the end about the things that you discussed, Pastor, that you present. So it's going to be a great event. We want people to tune in. We're excited.
And of course, because of COVID-19, this year, it's all virtual.
Yeah, and that was different for us. A little bit challenging, actually. You know, when we thought about we're going to even have it all together, and we actually started the negotiation and the conversation with Dr. Pastor, we were going to still do it in person at the convention center. And thank you, Dr. Pastor, for making that transition with us. But this is the second big event like this. We had a summit a couple of weeks ago, a young professional summit. But this is the first Diversify. We're going virtual. We're dealing with COVID. We also going to be talking about some of the things going on in our country right now. So it's going to be a very, very informative summit.
And as we touch on some of those in this conversation, Dr. Pastor, share with us more your story, your background, and what you plan to bring to the conversation at Diversify.
Well, I grew up in Southern California. My dad was an undocumented immigrant, and now here I am, a college professor with an endowed chair at the University of Southern California, which would probably be better if I had season football tickets, but still it's, you know, a bit of evidence of mobility. But I think that the experience of growing up and understanding, he was able to get legalized, but understanding the sort of precarity of his situation, understanding the nature of what it meant to be a relatively low wage worker and be the provider for a working class family. And then to think about the important role of education and my being able to move forward. That's kind of part of, I don't know, my DNA in terms of both analysis and in terms of perspective. Another really important part of my DNA is that I kind of came of age in political age in Los Angeles in the 1980s and in the 1990s, just as the city was turning majority people of color and just as the sharp inequalities in the city became revealed. And in 1992, of course, our city exploded around some of the same issues that the nation is exploding around right now. That is the police violence, in this particular instance, the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. In our instance, the acquittal of four police officers who had been caught on videotape, like a long time ago, viciously beating a black motorist, Rodney King. But just as then, what we realized was that policing was just the tip of the racist iceberg. That is, that what it was really revealing were bigger problems in terms of educational inequality, of economic inequality, and indeed even of environmental inequality in terms of the air that people breathe, whether or not they've got sufficient parkland, food security in their neighborhoods. So I think what I bring is a little bit of my own personal journey, my own commitments to thinking about how it is that conversations and movements can help tip the scales in a more just direction, and a pretty clear sense that sometimes a city comes to a really key moment for change. That's what happened for Los Angeles. And sometimes a nation comes to a very key moment for change. And I think the combination of the COVID crisis and the murder of George Floyd has lifted the veil on what's been going on in this country for a long time and created an opportunity, not just for communities of color, particularly the Black community, to voice their concerns and their experience, but for folks who are not Black, not necessarily from communities of color, to understand that, to embrace that, and to figure out how we can move together to a more inclusive America.
I'm old enough to remember 1992 as well. And I'm just curious, from your vantage point, has anything changed in the past 3 decades? Because we are finding ourselves here yet again. And if things have not changed in the past 3 decades, what's different about this moment that might lead to broader changes? We're hearing about some already, but that's just the beginning of the conversation.
That's a great question. Probably for an event sponsored by a business audience, I shouldn't be quoting Vladimir Lenin, but occasionally people you might not normally quote turn out to say incredibly smart things. Darren and I were sharing before we got on the air, Killer Mike's soliloquy in Atlanta was an incredibly eloquent statement combining his own experience as the son of a police officer with the rage that he felt as a Black man at the anti-Black violence on the part of the police, combined with the idea that the moment was to shift from just that rage and turn it into action that could actually change things. But to get back to the quote, Lenin said in the midst of the Russian Revolution, there are some decades when nothing happens, and there are some weeks when decades happen. And I think that we're in those weeks in which there's kind of a big sea change. And I do want to go back to 92. From outside of Los Angeles, you might say, gosh, not very much changed. But it's important to realize that our policing did change. It's nowhere near perfect. There's tremendous problems that remain. But we did move to more of a community policing model, and we wound up having some degree of accountability that we never had before. Perhaps more fundamentally, a city which had wound up being a city with tremendous economic desperation and dislocation became one of the first two major cities in the United States to raise its minimum wage to $15 an hour. It's a city in which immigrants feel protected because the local police force do not cooperate with immigration and customs enforcement. So I think a lot of change has happened in our own location. And I think we also have to fundamentally realize that a lot has changed in the United States as well. We had a Black president, and then we've had a backlash or a white backlash to that Black president. That's part of what's been going on. But to look at the streets right now and to understand that who is marching on the streets is not just Black protesters angered, legitimately so, about anti-Black racism baked into policing and many other systems, but lots of other non-Black people who are having seared into their consciousness what's going on for African Americans in the United States. I think we're at sort of a sea change in the consciousness, which makes a lot of things possible. And again, what I find helpful here, and maybe Darian can speak about this too, is I think that there's an increasing realization on the part of the business community that when you have an economy that's very inequitable in terms of income, that you're really creating the conditions for anger, for social discord, and creating the conditions to not have a productive workforce. That when you allow racism to be carried through policing and incarceration and education, you're essentially taking an important part of the workforce that could contribute to productivity, and you're saying, we're going to squander your talents. And I think that the moral case is being made, and what you'll see me doing at the summit is actually also making the economic case that now is the time to center equity, now is the time to center racial equity, that it's the right thing to do, but it's also the thing that will put us on a better economic path. Darian, I don't know whether you want to comment on whether or not that realization is kind of happening for folks in your business community as well.
Absolutely, and definitely Dr. Pastor, you hit the nail on the head. It's very important in the economics of it as well. As representing the chamber, we represent the business community, and that's very important to us. And as a chamber, we want to bring more of those things into our community, into our chamber, to grow the economy as a whole, not to kind of keep it divided. But I definitely wish you on that.
And this is what people are getting at when they say support Black and brown owned businesses, beyond doing a special day on social media, beyond doing a hashtag campaign. We're talking about serious brass tacks here.
Indeed. And you've got serious problems baked into the Chattanooga metropolitan area. So, for example, the poverty rate in Chattanooga for whites is around 13%, but for African Americans, it's about 30%. That's a threefold difference. That's pretty profound, and it's a lot larger than other places in the country. When you look at the share of children who are going to what we call high poverty schools, schools where more than 75% of the kids are on free and reduced price lunch. Now, be careful, not all high poverty schools are bad. In fact, my kids went to schools that were high poverty, had a lot of kids on free and reduced price lunch. That's just part of where we lived and the commitments that we made about our own children, making sure that they interacted with all children. And I know that there's good schools, but we also know when a school has a lot of concentration of poor kids, it's difficult for the parents to be able to supplement with their own donations. Often the best teachers don't teach there, et cetera. In the Chattanooga metropolitan area, about 18% of white kids go to high poverty schools, but two-thirds of Black kids and two-thirds of Latino kids go to high-poverty schools. That's a recipe for baking inequality in to the future labor market. So Chattanooga's got a ways to go, I'm sure, on all sorts of different dimensions. What I think is really important for us to do is to lift up the problems and lift up the challenges, but to really change the conversation to see these as opportunities. Because if we address the fundamental inequalities, you're going to wind up with a better ability to cohere on what is a great growth strategy for Chattanooga, and you're going to be able to tap into every talent in the Chattanooga metropolitan area and not allow people to be squandered or left behind. Part to get at what you started with when people are saying support Black and brown businesses is the idea that these are folks with tremendous entrepreneurial talent, and don't we want to make sure that they are successful, can grow, can develop assets, can employ more people, and can help anchor neighborhood and other economies.
Darian, where can people go online to participate in all this?
ChattanoogaChamber.com, and just go to the /diversity. It'll be a tab on the events page as well. But it's June 19th. On Juneteenth, starting at 8 a.m., going to 12:15. It's going to be an exciting event. Spread the word.
All right. Darian, Dr. Pastor, thank you so much.
Glad to be with you.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment.
You're listening to WUTC. On Tennessee Valley StoryCorps, we bring you conversations from people who went to the StoryCorps recording booth in Miller Park in the spring of 2019. Today, Adam Kinsey talks to his father, John Kinsey, about their development work in Chattanooga.
Tell me about Chattanooga in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, gosh. Chattanooga in the 70s, nobody wanted to be here at all. All of our, when people got out of high school, they just couldn't wait to leave. You know, it was in 1969, we were declared the dirtiest city in America by Walter Cronkite.
So in the 70s and 80s, when Chattanooga had not reached that tipping point, did you ever think about moving out of Chattanooga or you know, and you had opportunities elsewhere?
Yeah.
And what kept you here?
Well, you're probably what kept me here more than anything, you know. Well,
I was four.
Well, okay, but you were my son and you weren't leaving.
Out of all the real estate you've done here and elsewhere, what are you most proud of?
One of I'm not sure it's the one I'm proudest of, but the one that is the most interesting story, I think, is Riverset Apartments. And this is when the aquarium, of course, opens up in 1992. And we were involved in opening up the restaurant next to it at the visitor center. We were able to get TGI Fridays to come downtown, which, of course, now we don't know when in Chattanooga wants any chains, but at the time the city was very proud that we were able to talk a national chain into coming to downtown. So Then right after that, the River City said, okay, we need some housing down here. So they had a piece of property that they put out for bid. And the night before bids were due, I'm at my house by myself. Not, well, y'all, you're there, but you're already in bed. I think about 11 o'clock, I said to myself, you know, we need to bid on this. You know, I worked till about 3 or 4 in the morning, put together our bid, and submitted it the next morning. And lo and behold, we won the RFP. And, of course, Bill Sutterth, who was head of River City, he would point out that, you know, I would say, well, you know, we had the best bid. That's why you picked us. He said, you were the only bid. Nobody else bid. And it was the first new housing done in downtown Chattanooga in decades, 3 or 4 decades. And of course, now it's, there's a new housing development on every corner in Chattanooga. It's, we've come a long way. What you've been involved in a lot of, development you and I have done together. What are you proudest of?
I think for me, you know, Chattanooga Choo Choo has been a huge piece of my life, especially for the past couple of years.
What you have done at the Chattanooga Choo Choo, I mean, it's been more transformational than I think, or as transformational as anything else I've been involved in. And we hear that all the time, the variety of tenants. And this was all your idea to begin with, and you've overseen all the selection of the tenants, and it's just become something wonderful. And so anyways.
Thank you. Yep.
It's been fun working with you.
You too.
That was John Kinsey and his son, Adam. This Tennessee Valley StoryCorps and others can be found at our website, wutc.org. This series is produced and edited by me, Will Davis, and brought to you in part by EPB Fiber Optics.
This is Scenic Roots. Good afternoon. I'm Richard Winham. Every Tuesday, we feature music from streaming shows on the Barking Legs Facebook page. Today, we have their first streaming show featuring an artist from outside Chattanooga. David Jacob Strain, a soulful singer and gifted slide player, played a show from his home studio this past Friday evening. If you'd like to watch and listen to the complete show, it's still available on the Barking Legs Facebook page. From Eugene, Oregon, on Scenic Roots, this is David Jacobs Strain.
Welcome to the Barking Legs live streaming show. I'm David Jacobs Strain. Boys, well, he took her love back again. You better come on in my kitchen. It's raining out of doors, and I know my baby's gone, and she's never coming back. Took her last nickel from my nation's sack. Baby, come on in my kitchen, darling. It's gonna be raining out of doors, trouble, everybody puts her down. She's looking for her good friend, but none can be found. Mama, come on. We're just in my kitchen, baby. Yes, it's gonna be raining outside. Would you come on in my kitchen, darling? Yes, it's gonna be a raining out on the door. And this one was made for a friend of mine, Ben Stevens. And Ben sent it to me right before he moved to Jamaica on very short notice. And I haven't seen Ben since then, but I'm still playing his guitar. Okay, here we go. Somebody said they saw me dancing with the devil's daughter. Well, hell yes, I tried to take her home. I could have listened to my sweet angel's warning. Doesn't any young fool think he knows right from wrong? You must be a strong believer to walk this walk with me. Yeah, strong believer just to walk this walk with me. But have you ever seen a snake without a tail? Is your broken heart just too big to fail? Well, we both been told again and again that you must be a strong believer to walk this walk with me. Yeah, strong believer just to walk this walk with me. Have you endless days and sleepless nights? Looks like a choice, it's a sacrifice. You're not the first, just the only one who could pick me up when I come under. Need a strong believer. Strong believer. Strong believer. Strong believer. Yeah. This is a song that someone asked for
a week or two ago, and I don't know if I got to it, so I'm going to play it tonight. It's a title track from an album I made. I made this just before I dropped out of college to play music full-time. This is called Ocean or a Teardrop. Microphone's just in the right place for y'all to hear it.
Die.
Espescadero. Joyce is asking, what happened to the Make Biscuits Not War hat? I had a hat from the Loveless Cafe, said Make Biscuits Not War, and I wore it, Joyce, I wore it too much, and I wore it out. Too many hikes, too many hot and sweaty hikes in the Sierra.
Walking out on that frozen lake, waiting for the ice to break. You can get right down to the heart of the mistake. Not much heart with it all. Somebody cry. All the way just to tell a lie. Well, she did it with a, well, she did it well. She did it with a, hey, hey. She did it with a smile.
Well, let me play that ending again.
She did it with a smile.
That's better.
Yeah.
That's a song that came in a dream one night. The whole song. But with really bad music, like kind of like a bad Billy Joel knockoff. And it took me a couple of years to discover I could just leave out all the chords and just let the guitar do the work, let it just ring, and that was all it needed. Thank you.
Cowboy Junkies and the Miracle Men. With the way out west, the pavement ends. Digging up billboards, cutting down signs. Taking 22 rivals to the neon lights. Neon up on the mountain. Nobody knows my name. Woo! Nobody taught us to live out this way. Making love in the fields at the break of day. How am I? I'm on a look into the sea. On the prison towers in the land of the free. I'm up on the mountain where nobody knows my name. I'm up on the mountain where nobody knows my name. In a dead man's clothes, riding on the deaths of the ones below. Well, now I'm chasing echoes in the canyon. Does it feel my name, yeah. Thank you so much for being with me here tonight. I'm here in Eugene, Oregon, in my little home studio, and I want to leave you with one more tune. City lights, it's a daydream asylum. Where the days, yeah, they fade to night. And when you come to see me, baby, leave your visions by the door. This lonesome miner's cabin, you've seen them all before. And you were my Gold Coast lover. Put the stars in the California sky. And I thought this love, well, it might last forever. More until we ran out of time. How long do you keep on searching? There is no gold in your claim. How long do you keep on yearning? When old love only brings you pain. And when you come to see me, won't you leave your heartaches by the door? This lonesome miner's cabin, it's seen them all before. Yes, it has. I live up on a mountain. Halfway to the coast, with the coyotes and the ravens in a cabin.
David Jacob Strain from his home studio in Oregon, streamed live on the Barking Legs Facebook page. The full 90-minute show is still up on the website. This is Scenic Roots on WUTC.
Thank you all for listening tonight.
When you come to see me, baby, leave your heartaches by the door. This lonesome miner's cabin, it's seen them all before.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Thanks, as always, to our producers, Haley Solomon, Carly Dodson, Elena Nurabadi, Connor Brown, and Will Davis. Email us at scenicroutes423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroutes423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.